Mike Conti joins us right now, as he always does on Tuesdays at this time. Now, Mike anchored our draft coverage on Thursday night. Very exciting night. What was the... Because I know you guys were off the air by the time they traded back in to get the second-round pick,
yes,
right?
Yeah.
But when they made the first-round pick, and then you were still down there when it happened, mm-hmm. like, what was the reaction to all of that?
Definitely the most positively received first-round pick the Falcons have had, probably since at least Julio, and maybe longer. I mean, we have been at that draft party before, but we've joked about it, and there have been some... moments like Penix last year was one where no one really understood any of it. Even the Drake London pick a couple years ago, I remember there was a guy in front of our broadcast position. He was wearing a Falcons hat. Now, remember, this is a party for season ticket holders.
Mm-hmm.
He's wearing a Falcons hat. He slams the hat to the ground and starts stomping on it because he was that upset about Drake London.
Who did he want? The Garrett Wilson or something?
I'm trying to remember who else was on the board at that time.
That was the Garrett Wilson draft.
There was some good receivers in the class. Yeah. I do remember people were mad that London was their guy.
I think it was also like, why are you taking another wide receiver? You need an edge.
Sure.
You know, this way... The all-timer for me was the Chris Lidstrom.
Yes.
That was – and I think you were there, weren't you?
Randy was with
I was there, and your face
you
said
remember?
It all. Yes, Mike, you came back. You said, oh, you're not going to believe this. And all me, Dave, and Wesley's like, what?
Yeah. Well, I just remember, like, there's all this hype in the stadium. There were some really recognizable names on the board at that time, too. I feel like it was around the 15th overall pick.
Yeah, 14. Yeah.
14. And they announce Chris Lindstrom, and everyone in the stadium is kind of like, who's that? And they blow the train horn. So, like, you've got all these people looking around like, who's Chris Lindstrom? What? Why didn't they take this guy? And then, you know, it was just the surreal scene. This was, I think, the most popular first-round pick that the Falcons have made in quite some time. You could go to Julio. Some people have said Matt Ryan. I don't even remember there was – full consensus about Matt Ryan when he was picked. So it's remarkable to me that this is the first time ever the Falcons have taken someone from Georgia in one of the first two rounds. Incredible coincidence. Really fortunate that it worked out the way that it did for the Falcons, because the more that we're learning now, you know, first of all, taking all 10 minutes to make the pick, I think, was a clear sign they were trying to trade out of it. I think Pierce was their guy all along. Mm-hmm. But when someone... it just kind of falls into your lap and presents himself in the way that Walker fell to them, you can't say no to it when it's right. all said and done. So, you know, if everything works out from an injury standpoint, you have found now your two edge rushers that hopefully you can build around for the next 5 years. I really like what they did later in the draft, but easily the most popular first-round pick the Falcons have made in quite some time, based on what I saw at the draft party.
Mike, when you look at the depth that they've tried to acquire at that position, the outside pass rush position, does it look like one of those things where you're like, okay, this guy's coming in, like, if he doesn't get 10 sacks this year, but yet he contributes to, say, 7, is that – because I know that a lot of people want to put the draft class on the James Pierce comeback to get him. But if he's at 7 sacks
– I'd be thrilled with that, wouldn't
right.
you?
Yes,
yeah, that's
yes.
great output.
7 sacks would have led the Falcons team every single year dating back to when Adrian Claiborne had 9.
And sadly, by multiple sacks in most cases.
Yeah. That would be the best year a Falcons pass rusher has had in like 7 years.
Yeah, I would be thrilled with that. And if the two of them combine for 12 or 13, I'd be thrilled with that too. I think, you know, again, I don't want it to be just about output and the sack number, because as you know, Randy, so much of it comes down to pressures and hurries and quarterback hits and things like that. And sometimes you can get home and not get the guy on the ground. But I'm looking for the disruption. I'm looking for someone who can get to the quarterback within, you know, 2 or 3 seconds and give the secondary time to, you know, do what they need to do. And I really like going out and getting Bowman and Watts later in this draft and shoring up the safety position. I think it all kind of is interconnected. I'm not going to dwell on, Pierce only had 5 sacks. That's a bust. Or, you know, Walker, he only had 6 sacks this year. I was hoping for 12. To me, it's more about the overall mentality of – not mentality, but the overall disruption that you hope that these two can cause.
Me too. I mean, and I look, people can judge it however they want. If it's going to come down to whether or not James Pierce is a Pro Bowler for the next 3 years, and because you traded to get him and gave up a next year pick and all that kind of stuff, that's fine. But like, if we're talking about a Falcons pass rush that over the next 3 to 5 years is one of the better pass rushes in the league, then they fixed it.
Like, absolutely.
That's the that's the goal is to no longer be what they've been, which is the worst pass rush in the NFL for a very long time.
Yeah.
If we're talking about like a top 10 pass rush over the next 3 to 5 years to go along with everything else that they have, that's how I'm going
to
judge
it. Get me to top 12 in sacks. Get me to top 12 in sacks this year. It's a success. Even if that means Pierce has 3 and someone else has 10. You know, get me to top 12. Get me in that top third in the league in sacks. It has not been that way since, I think, 2016.
Yeah, somewhere there.
You know? Even then, they were top half.
Beasley who went crazy, but no one else really did. Mm-hmm. So it might even be further back than that. Boy, if you get that turned around and suddenly you've made yourself a top third defense at getting to the quarterback, it's going to take care of all kinds of other problems for the Falcons. So that's where I want to be.
Mike, and Andy mentioned, because we have not talked to you since all the upheaval with the Hawks and everything like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, me and Andy, we threw our hat in the ring as far as, you know, being affirmed to find you another basketball or president of basketball operations or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Do you think they try to go swinging, like one of those guys who's already been established, or is it somebody who's a GM on somebody's team that they're might bring to be the president? How do you think this search is going off right now for them?
I think they are very zeroed in on one or two candidates. Okay. And the two candidates that I think they're zeroed in on, based on what I have been told, have both either been general managers or are current general managers in the NBA. In fact, I think both of them have been. I don't think either are current, from what I've been told. But that's the type of profile I think they're looking for there. I want to just kind of backtrack for a moment. I thought Landry Fields did a really good job. I thought he did a really good job, especially this year. Mm-hmm. He nailed the Dyson Daniels trade. Mm-hmm. Great job. I think he got pretty much everything right at the trade deadline. I know there's still some people who miss DeAndre Hunter around here. DeAndre Hunter is still playing. He's in the second round of the playoffs. I still think the totality of the Hawks was made better as a result of the moves that Landry Fields made, bringing in George Niang and LeVert and Terrence Mann. So he's right. He got the Rizochet pick right over Sarr. I know Sarr had a good close to the season. Rizochet, you know, probably will be runner-up for Rookie of the Year, I think. Maybe he wins. I think he'll probably be runner-up. I think he got pretty much right. So Landry Fields deserves a lot of credit for what he did within, you know, quite frankly, the realities of what he had to him to make the team better. I thought he did a really, really good job. So that said, if you're going to move on from him, you've got to make a big splash, you know. And this is one of the things, like we talk about this in MLS sometimes. You know, when you have salary caps and spending restrictions and things like that, one area where you can make your team a lot better without having to worry about a salary cap is spending for a coach, spending for a front office, spending for a general manager, president of basketball ops, whatever. So here's an opportunity now for the Hawks. They can go out, they can spend a lot of money to bring a big name in, and they don't have to worry about going into the luxury tax for front office, or the luxury tax overall. It seems like a really good opportunity for the Hawks to take advantage of. So we'll see what it – I think they are very locked in on one particular candidate right now for one. But
if I guess his name, will you say that I'm right?
Not on the air, I will.
Okay.
Hey, that's about like the whole Terry thing last week.
Yeah,
huh?
It's like when Terry Fontenot showed me his phone when he got a text message from a GM.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah. And he really did.
Wow.
He was like, don't tell anybody.
But don't
about
tell
it.
Him. And you have kept the secret.
Yeah, to my grave.
It's in the lockbox.
It's in there.
Yeah.
Well, I told Jack, but Jack didn't know how to talk.
Well, here's the other thing, too. Like, I could give you the name, and then something could change. I could look like a dope. So I think they are locked on the general profile of what they are locked in on. What they're going to try to bring in is someone who has a track record of success with roster building.
Yeah.
And a little bit, maybe roster overhauls the wrong way to put it, but roster modification might be a better way to phrase it. Because if you look at the way that the Hawks, this in the press release that they put out last week, I thought it was really interesting. They said something to the effect of, we have a lot of complicated decisions that we need to make this offseason. And we need someone who can guide a lot of complicated decisions. Well, I can think of one
There's only one complicated decision,
yes.
And it's what they're going to do with Trae Young.
That's right.
That's it. That's the only complicated decision.
I think they've kind of put it there in plain sight in that press release. Like, you're going to be bringing in, I don't know if you call him GM or vice president or president of basketball ops, or I don't know what the title will be, but you're going to bring in someone whose first major decision is either going to be to affirm what you've done with Trae Young or make the decision on Trae Young.
Right.
And then deal with the aftermath or the building around him.
Right.
That's probably number one on that list.
And again, maybe this is not like a fair read on this, slanted in a biased direction, whatever, and that it might be. But like, that sounds to me like they're so unsure.
Oh, I think they're very sure.
Oh, really?
Why don't they just do it then? Like, what do they need somebody else?
To now.
Why don't they let some? Why do they need somebody else to come in here and tell them whether or not they've been right about?
That's
Trae
not what
not.
I said. That what I mean is, if they have made the decision, now you're going to bring in someone who's going to help you manage what to do going forward.
No, but what I mean is, if the biggest decision or the most complicated decision in the franchise is what to do with Trae going forward.
Yeah.
They can't make that decision? Like, you got to go get somebody else to come do that?
Oh, I see.
That seems wild to me.
I've probably misspoke. So let me try to clean this up. I think the owner, GM, the coach, like, I think they all pretty much know by now what they would prefer to do with Trae Young. Now, I don't know what the answer is.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay.
But my guess is,
maybe Landry had a different vision than that.
I don't know that. Okay. I don't even know that. But my guess is, like, I don't think they're sitting around, I don't know what to do. Let's bring in someone who will tell us what
to do. Okay, good.
I don't get that vibe.
Good.
I think they, I just don't know what the decision is. What you're trying to do is find, let's again call him president of basketball ops. I'm sure through the process of finding that person, they're going to say, look, here's what we think we should do with Trae. Let's get your input on that. And then, you know, if the input matches our idea, good, let's move forward. If your input doesn't match, okay, explain why, and let's see where we go from there.
I will say, because there's been names out there, like rumored names that are tied to the job. If those names are right, like some of the way that those teams were built when those guys had success in other places were by going into the luxury tax. Like, in some cases, extremely into the luxury tax. Now, they won championships because of it. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know which one's the chicken or the egg. But, like, if I'm the guy and they're like, all right, what are you going to do? It's like, well, when we did it there, we did get all the guys. But then we had to pay a whole bunch of money to keep them.
Yes.
In fact, 1 year in Golden State, we were $100 million into the luxury tax. Yeah. Now, we won a championship that year. But we were so far into the luxury tax.
Do you know how hard it would be for the Hawks to get that far into the luxury tax in one off season?
Yes, it would be. Yes,
that would be breathtaking. I don't know how.
That's what they're going to. Like, the guy would be like, part of my success strategy, has been you're going to have to pay a whole bunch of money to help me build this roster.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting.
End of the conversation.
I think it's going to be really, really interesting, and you know, it looks like the Hawks are probably going to get a pick around 14, in that 13-14 range. So the offseason starts now for them and the Miami Heat.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
We'll talk about that in the noon hour also. That was an embarrassment last night on an NBA basketball court. Thank you, Mike.
All right.
Appreciate it, Mike.